Thank you. Well, it's very appropriate that I give this talk straight after Uli's, because I'm going to be talking about a particular extreme, extreme values of the parameters that are appropriate for the geodynamo. I've put in brackets here for the geodynamo as a caveat to try and alleviate any confusion. There are, in fact, two types of Taylor states floating around in the literature whose only connection is they're named after the same J.B. Taylor. One is to do with relaxation of plasmas, and I'm going to talk about the other one. And this is work with Glenn Eiley and Andy Jackson. So these are the now familiar non-dimensional Navier-Stokes equations, which we need to solve in order to simulate the geodynamo. Of course, there's the induction equation as well, but I don't actually need to discuss that here. So, and in the case of the Earth, there are particularly extreme parameter values. In particular, the Ekman number measuring viscosity is tiny, 10 to the minus 15 or so. And the Rossby number measuring the influence of the inertial terms is also very small. So as a first approximation, one might simply delete those terms and consider the resulting magnetostrophic balance, where we only have Coriolis pressure, buoyancy, and the Lorentz. So let's look at some immediate consequences of taking this approximation. So the first thing I'm going to do is to take the azimuthal component of the equation. And immediately you can see that the buoyancy force goes out because it's assumed to be radial. Okay. The next thing I'm going to do is take an average over cylinders aligned with the rotation axis. And here are some examples of such cylinders. In so doing, the phi component, the azimuthal component of the pressure gradient, integrates to zero, because I'm integrating essentially d pi by d phi from 0 to 2 pi around an azimuth. And because pressure is single valued, that term drops out. And perhaps less obviously, the Coriolis force also drops out when we do this procedure. Why is this? Well, if we take the phi component of the Coriolis force, it's simply the cylindrical radial component of the velocity Us, where S is the cylindrical radius. So we need to show that this term integrates to zero over the cylinders. And the proof of that is very straightforward. Essentially, we add in to this integral a contribution from the n caps, but un, the normal component of the flow, is zero at the boundary. So this term is zero, but of course we can then formulate the whole integral as one of the normal component over the whole cylinder. And using the divergence theorem, and assuming the flow is incompressible, this becomes zero. And what assumptions do I need to push through this argument? Well, the flow must be incompressible in order to make this term zero. But in fact, the anelastic approximation also works. And we also need the flow, the boundaries to be impenetrable to any flow. And that's it. They're the only assumptions you need to make. And way back in 1963, J.B. Taylor proved that his famous Taylor's constraint, which states that the azimuthal component of the Lorentz force integrated over any cylinder is zero, because there's nothing to balance it. And with some terminology, any magnetic field satisfying this constraint is termed a Taylor state. And secondly, this constraint holds for any choice of cylinder. In particular, there are infinitely many choices of such cylinders, so there are, on the face of it, infinitely many constraints. And arguably, this is a rather difficult beast to handle and has been a stumbling block for many years. So the geodynamo models that Uli's been talking about and others produce fields which are very realistic in terms of their morphology if viewed on the core mantle boundary. But they're not Taylor states because the parameters they're able to use are not the correct ones. So of course the question is, are we in the correct asymptotic regime, or is it simply by chance that these models work so well? So some properties of Taylor states that we'd like to know. Is there a characteristic spectrum? This would be a good test to see if the geodynamo models produced are in the correct regime. Are there any common features to Taylor states? It's interesting to consider this in light of observations and ask what we can infer about the structure of the interior field of the Earth from simply observations on the Earth's surface. So to start with, the radial, latitudinal, and azimuthal field components are completely unknown in the center of the Earth. But we know that the magnetic field is divergence-free. So this relation holds for any volume V, V dot ds equals zero. And in so doing, we are able to reduce the three unknown components, Br, B theta, B phi, to just two, the poloidal and toroidal scalars. Now when we add in the Taylor constraint into the mix, we see that this also introduces an infinite number of constraints. So is it possible that this two-parameter family of vector fields reduces just to one? And if so, if we now add in the observations taken on the core mantle boundary, how constrained is the interior field? Okay, so this is an animation of the current observations of the magnetic field. Satellites measure the magnetic field, which can be fit to a potential field, assuming that the atmosphere and mantle is an electrical insulator, which can be downward continued to the core mantle boundary. And we see here the radial component of magnetic field. Question is, of course, what is beneath the core mantle boundary? Can we say anything about the field structure at all? So the quest for the Taylor states is much like the quest for the Holy Grail. It's a much sought after state. And ever since Taylor wrote his paper, and particularly in the 1970s, there's been a lot of effort to find any example of a Taylor state. There's limited progress with axisymmetric models, that is, you take the mean field models and try and push the Ekman number as small as you can. And more recently, of course, 3D geodynamo models become possible, And one can attempt to see whether or not in the asymptotic regime that a Taylor state is achieved. This is a figure from Rotvig and Jones showing a measure of Taylorization as a function of Ekman number. So we're not doing badly, but there's still some way to go. That's the message here. Okay, so what I'd like to talk to you now about is how one would go about constructing a Taylor state. Suppose a magnetic field is expanded in n modes, which I'm going to call Bi, with coefficient Ci. Then if you were to substitute your magnetic field expansion into this expression, you'd end up with n squared terms, because it's a quadratic. And if each of these n squared terms was an independent algebraic form, we simply set each to be zero in order to find a Taylor state. Unfortunately, we have n squared constraints and only n degrees of freedom, and so in general there'll be no solution. Notice that if we assume that the field is finitely truncated in terms of its modal decomposition, we now only have a finite number of constraints rather than an infinite number. So if we expand our magnetic field in terms of poloidal and toroidal decomposition like this, and we introduce some kind of radial basis to expand in radius, which is chosen such that the magnetic field is smooth everywhere. Then if we adopt this expansion, it turns out when we grind out this integral, you end up with essentially a polynomial times this prefactor. And it also turns out that if the magnetic field is finitely truncated, then this series terminates. Of course, in order to arrange for a Taylor state, we just have to set each one of these coefficients to be zero. And it turns out that the number of terms in this expansion is a lot less than n, the number of degrees of freedom you have in your model. And therefore, Taylor states are ubiquitous. So how can this happen? How can we have such a small number of constraints? Well, the key point is that spherical harmonics are polynomials in disguise. We use a polynomial basis set in radius. And it turns out, therefore, that every contribution to this integral is also a polynomial. As an illustration, here's a toy problem with just four magnetic field. And if you imagine grinding out this integral, you might end up with something like this. And of course, in order to arrange for a Taylor state, we only have to manufacture these constants such that up to s squared times this factor, that the constant times the s squared terms individually vanish. So we have two constraints rather than, for instance, an algebraic form like this, where in order to get this thing to vanish, each term has to vanish individually, and this has four constraints. If you chose a Bessel function expansion in radius rather than polynomials, we end up with a worst case scenario because the product of Bessel functions is not a simple, they're all independent algebraic forms. And so it's impossible to find a Taylor state with such a expansion. Of course, having reduced the infinite number of constraints to a finite number, we still have the problem of setting each of these coefficients to zero, and each of these coefficients is a quadratic form in each of the magnetic field coefficients, poloidal and toroidal scalars. However, this quadratic is sparse and could be exploited. So here's an example of what we can do. So I'm going to take the observed magnetic field on the of the Earth up to spherical harmonic degree 3. I'm going to extend it into the core by using a very simple profile. In fact, the profile which minimizes the dissipation. The toroidal field is unconstrained by observations, so I'm simply going to add in 4 low degree toroidal modes. Now it turns out that there's no quadratic coupling between these toroidal coefficients, which is not immediately obvious, but it's true. And having fixed the poloidal field, the problem is then linear in the unknown toroidal coefficients. It turns out we have 3 terms in the expansion, so there are just 3 constraints, and we have 4 unknowns, and so there's a 1 parameter family of solutions. So I'm going to show an animation now of a suite of exact Taylor states. This is the 1 parameter value of solutions, and what I'm going to show are the contours of the azimuthal components of the toroidal field, which you need to add in to get the total field into a Taylor state. So it's rotated to what it should be. The rotation axis is along the horizontal. Okay. This is not supposed to show anything physical, it's merely a proof of concept. Okay, so it's possible to reduce this infinite class of constraints to a finite number. The exact number of constraints depends somewhat on the choice of radial basis that you choose. And because it's a finite number rather than an infinite number, it's similar in spirit to matching your magnetic field to an electrically insulating exterior. So using this method, we can find exact Taylor states, although they're not dynamo generated. So some things we're going to look at: do these Taylor states possess any general characteristics? And if they do, maybe we can say something about the field structure inside the Earth's core. And also, we're planning to investigate extremal models. For instance, what is the Taylor state of least energy or dissipation consistent with observations? Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. We have time for some comments or questions. Oh, there we go, Andreas.
One of your transparencies said that Taylor states, after all, are ubiquitous. So why are they so difficult to find in time integrations, and why have people looked for them for so long?
Well, one answer could be that that they're only ubiquitous if you use the right radial expansion. So the radial expansion has to be such that the magnetic field is everywhere smooth, including at the origin. So it could be that this has an influence over.
But if you use an expansion big enough so that the field is well resolved, then it shouldn't matter very much whether you chose polynomials or something else. to the extent that they're all approximations?
Yeah, I don't really have an answer. I've never tried to time step to find a Taylor state, so I don't know.
I have a related question. If Dan were here, is Dan here? I'm sure he'd have pointed out about inertial modes and how important they are. So leaving out the du by dt term.
Yeah, okay, important. So the neglect of the inertial terms comes down to the choice of Rossby number. And the Rossby number here is defined using a magnetic diffusion time scale. So it's a ratio of the rotation time scale to how long it takes a magnetic field to diffuse, of the order of 30,000 years. But of course, absolutely, if you're interested in shorter time scales, then you really have to include such things.
Rick, did you have a question?
I was just going to say that at the beginning you mentioned the distinction between the two types of Taylor states.
And yeah.
I'm just going to point out that this condition is also true in the plasma relaxed Taylor state. It's a subset of those conditions. J cross B is equal to zero. Here J cross B phi. Mm-hmm. So there's a relation.
If I remember the original Taylor paper, I thought he had a recipe for finding U from a Taylor state, which then left you with a dynamo generated field. The second half of the paper tells you how to find the velocity from this.
That's right, and to my knowledge, no one's tried to do that. Well, at least not successfully, anyway. possibly because it's been difficult to put yourself in a Taylor state to start with.
Chris is chuckling to himself there.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've tried many times. This is, as Phil said, not terribly successful. it's to do the fact. I mean, the Taylor concept is inviscid, and of course, it's extremely difficult to do these inviscid calculations numerically because if you don't have some dissipation, things diverge. I mean, to answer Steve's question very quickly, I mean, Taylor originally had envisaged inertial oscillations, but he pointed out that these are on a very short time scale, and he thought that these would radiate away and dissipate, and then eventually leave you in the Taylor state. So he had a natural process by which you get rid of.
But Dan would argue that you're always exciting these inertial oscillations. So. Oh, and Fausto would argue something else.
I guess this is back to what you were asking. You know, there's an equivalent, a similar problem that is finding force-free magnetostatic equilibria, you know, for coronal things. And, you know, if you just say, I want to find the solution of the magnetostatic equilibrium, you get this horrible nonlinear Gratz-Fafranov equation, which I held to solve. But then you can say, well, why can't I solve them just running MHD until this thing, you know, settles down to one of those things? And if you try to do it that way, it's even a worse nightmare. So it's not always obvious that you find these things as easily as one would think.
Very last question, Henri Claude.
We talked about the Taylor-Prudhomme constraint and saying that the constraint is kind of enforced by the propagation of inertial waves. In the case of the Taylor state, what is propagating the information that you should be in that Taylor state over cylinders?
Well, that would be the torsional oscillations, which are...
Speaking of the radial, propagation, you already have... Suppose that everything is kind of instantaneous on the cylinder, right?
That's right. Following Dave Gubbin's comment, the Taylor originally envisaged having the geostrophic flow, which acted in such a way as to always keep the magnetic field in a Taylor state. So the geostrophic flow is simply the azimuthal flow on cylinders. That was his original idea.
Okay, I think we're going to have to finish there, sorry. And we're going to reconvene at 2:00. So let's thank the speakers again.